is what? It's
the day of judgment.
What, to be a Tatra in Kippur? That was our nest. That was a nest. A military nest is a Tatra in Kippur, not on Sukkot.
Why?
Because on Sukkot the roads were crowded with travelers, with vacationers. Why in Kippur, thank God, the roads were empty, the army could move. And with all that, they had hundreds of casualties in traffic.
Traffic
casualties, I don't
understand. Sure, getting to the front.
Could you imagine if that would have been a sickness? Everyone is traveling in
everyone's on vacation.
Home. Everyone's on vacation. They just start going back and forth with the cars.
It's incredible insight. I mean, you have to know the land and the life to be able to, you know, and we view it as our biggest debacle. You see.
That's why there's one thing in Israel which they do the best, is highways now. Every year you come, there's a new highway, more developed, more just highways. The human character goes down, but the highways go regular. Mm-hmm.
Take a look at line 70. About five words into the line, Tanu Rabbanon. We learned in a Braisa. A Braisa is written by Tanoim, just like a Mishnah is written by Tanoim. You just asked a question of halachic significance, and he gave you an answer not of halacha, but of nisim. There is no hilchas nisim in halacha. He gave you an answer of more of agoda. Go ahead, see, I'm not expecting you. Tanu Rabbanan, in a brisa you would expect halacha. Watch what you get. Mishacharav abayis varishona. First destruction. Niskatsu kitos kitosha pirche kihuna. As the enemy started to crowd in, groups of pirche kihuna, of young Kohanim in training, would get together, they huddled together in masses, umaftechos ha'ichol biyadah, and they had the keys to the Beis HaMikdash. The Olul HaGad, realizing that the enemy was crowding in, they went up to the upper story, went up onto the roof, the Gad HaEchol, crying out, V'yomru lefanav, yelling, Ribbono Shel Olam, Hoil v'lo zachinu lihiyos gizbarin ne'amonim, since we cannot be faithful treasurers to hold this Beis HaMikdash intact, is Yihiyu Maftechos Misuros Loch. You take Ribbono Shel Olam and you go ahead and hold on to these keys. Uzirakum Klape Malo, they threw the keys upwards. The Yatsusok Ein Fisas Yad, and as it were, a shadow of a hand came down, the Kibaltom Mehem, and scooped up the keys, the haim, and these kohanim then went, kofzu v'naflu l'tocha or. They went ahead, and they jumped into the fire below them as the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in being burned. V'alehen konein Yishayahu HaNavi. And it is about them that Yishayahu HaNavi yelled, Masa geichi zayon, ma lecha ifo. Ki alisa kulech legagos tshuos meleya ir homiya kirya aliza chalalayich lo chalalecherev v'lo mesei midbar af ba'kadosh baruch hu ne'emar. Even with HaKadosh Baruch Hu it was said mekalker kir shua el hahar. Line 75. We established what happened on Tisha B'Av, what happened before that on Shavuot v'Tammuz, and we have to.
Ask a question. Come on, don't.
No, we don't understand the pusik. What I ask questions, I don't understand the pusik. How does it derive from that pusik that the hand came out from the skies and picked up the keys?
No, ki alis kulech legagot.
Aha.
All right.
What means that all of you went up to the roofs?
Yeah.
That is talking about the Kohanim.
Yeah.
Keshuot Mle'ah. Keshuot Mal'ah.
Alright, Yehomiyah. A hustling, bustling city, Kiryah Lizah, joyous city. Right? Chalalayich lo chalalecherev, lo misei milchama. They die not necessarily because of war and because of the sword. How did they die? And this is where the Agoda comes and says, what did they go up on the roof for? They went up on the roof knowing full well that if they would, they would be burned to death because downstairs was burning. And then it's the job of the Agoda to fill in with its, you know, with its visual symbols. All right? We cannot take care of the Beis Hamikdash anymore.
So
we're giving it back to you.
A hand came down from the sky.
These are symbolic things. The same thing by the Asara Aruge Malchus. Who was it? Rabbi Hananya ben Chadya? Who was burnt, and they asked, what do you see? He was wrapped in a Torah.
The letters are going up to heaven.
The letters are going up to heaven, but the parchment was burning. What's the symbol there?
Isn't that silly?
What is the symbol?
It's a realistic thing.
What is realistic? The letters are going up to heaven.
No, because when they start saying the Torah was a schara, whatever they were complaining about, the Torah's being burned in such a degrading manner, it says, no, it's only the gvil is being burned. What do you call gvil in English?
The parchment.
But actually, the words are going up to heaven.
Well, I can understand the parchment being burned. What is symbolized by words going up to heaven? The ink? The ink suddenly flowed upwards, not downwards?
No, of course it doesn't mean that.
It means the spirit of Torah will still exist. The keys, what the Pirchei Kohuna was saying is, you gave us the keys to watch this Beis HaMikdash and watch it carefully. We didn't do the job. We're returning it to you, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, until such time as there will be a door to be worthy of being able to hold the keys once again. Trust, simple trust and integrity. This generation doesn't have enough trust in whom you can allow the keys to stay. We muffed it, we made our mistakes, and a hand as if came and took it and returned the keys once again 70 years later.
Which Agadas do we take literally, that it's like a story, that this is the way it happened, or which ones do we, you know...
Severe machlokes between the Rambam and Rav Haigon. Rav Haigon was, in the times of the Gaonim, was confronted with this. And he said, everything is literal. Okay? The Rambam wouldn't hear of such a thing. The Rambam, as his son, Rav Avrom ben HaRambam, writes, intended on writing a full perush to Agadita, and never was able to do it. As a result of his schedule, or for whatever reason, he didn't write it. He instead went ahead and wrote a handbook called the Mora Nevuchim. Okay, that's how Mora Nevuchim, the Guide to Perplexed, resulted.
By Avram, not by Avram.
No, the Rambam. But Rabbi Rambam writes that his father intended to write on Agoda. We read that. We learn that in the beginning of Ein Yaakov. There are a couple of introductions, Mevoha Agada. And there is a statement there by Rabbi Avrom Rambam that his father wanted to go ahead and say. Now the Rambam gives us certain insights of which this and which not. But this is the perennial conflict from generation to generation, to see in its symbols literal allusions or symbolic allusions. There are those who are threatened by symbolism because you kind of symbolically wash away the effects of what is being said or done or being asked of you, and you get around it, say, that doesn't only mean this, it's only symbolic that you got to do it this way. It doesn't mean that you go to the mikveh, it means that water sprinkled on you in baptismal fashion symbolically takes you and makes you a new bria. And this is exactly what was done. So it threatens certain people. No two ways about it. Philo and his philosophy was a symbolic, entirely a symbolic philosophy, based on Greek norms. And he took almost everything symbolically. Rambam didn't. Tragically bereft of his understanding, in that we don't have a full and systematic perush on the Agoda. Did Alexander mount the back of an eagle and be able to fly from one end of the world to the other? Did he or didn't he?
It's so vivid. It said that he saw the human being so small and he got so scared.
Okay. Alexander could do it. Why can't the United States Postal Service do it with the eagle for $10.35, and still they are late on express mail? Still they're late. And why couldn't... We don't know. We're trapped. We're really trapped. Are you a literalist? Rav Haigon insists. I don't want to open up any kind of conversation here. What has happened and finished. Or are you a philosophical symbolist, giving symbols to what... I prefer to look at it a different way. It's the Rambam. He quotes, he's in Maskiot Kesef B'Tapuchei Zahav. You take an Agoda literally, so you have sterling silver. There are no two ways about it. Sterling silver. But if you look at it in its inner message, alright, the Nistar, you have a solid gold apple. There you are. There's nothing wrong with it in its literal terms. Yes, our mentality can't pick up much of the literalness. Hand coming out from sky, from Shemayim. When we want to say that there is a Rabbonu Shel Olam that doesn't have a hand, in Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu scooped it up, so to speak. You know, it just offends us.
The keys that were mentioned, didn't you teach in Eretz Chelek about a king? Took the keys, or he kept the keys for himself, wouldn't open the place of Mikdash very early if he slept late?
No, that was Shlomo HaMelech. Not that he wouldn't open the base of Mikdash. The Sha'arim, the portals, the gates into Yerushalayim, he didn't close. He put toll booths in front of everyone. Okay? Now, he closed certain other gates so that you wouldn't have a toll-free road into Yerushalayim. You see, the only road that you could travel into Yerushalayim was a Garden State or a turnpike. You could not take 19 or a Route 46 or whatever. And that's what he was faulted for. Now, he had to pay the bill. You have to pay the bill, then you levy taxes. Don't have to pay the bill, then you worry about a free ride.
Yeah, the Gemara says he wanted to build some personal things.
Whatever he wanted.
A wife or a lover that he or somebody has. I thought I remember someone with keys that he kept it. Maybe this was.
Was he wrong? Was he really that wrong for being tall together?
Was he wrong? You know, these are relative kinds of situations.
And is he frowned upon?
He was frowned upon because in relationship to his father David, who opened up all kinds of gates, free gates into Yerushalayim, it is wrong. But remember that the economic stability that Shlomo HaMelech brought for the years that indeed he was Melech al Yisrael was second to none. If you bring economic stability, it means someone's got to pay the bill. David HaMelech didn't have the economic stability that Shlomo HaMelech was able to generate, but instead created a sense of national purpose and unity by the wars that he fought. He too was taken to task by his closest people. His own family called him a bloody murderer. He said, what do you want from me? I've got to defend the borders. I must push the PLO back as far as possible. And he extended the borders the way he did. So everything that you do takes a toll. To say that it is wrong, well, time and history is going to have to judge. But look at it from the perspective of the individual who is making the history, the David HaMelech, the Shlomo HaMelech. They probably would have said, in retrospect, if I had to do it again, I'd do it the same way. You know, because there was peace, there was security, there was Mashiach. David was a Mashiach. This was, it carried on for a second generation. There was every indication that that was the route to go. It was conceived of with Shlomo, with David. You know, David is the architect. You know, one of the big tragedies in life that I'm playing games with. I call it a tragedy, but you know, I don't get terribly shaken about it. Is that the more and more I see, the more and more people are being credited for things that were conceived of by their predecessors. No two ways about it. I have no jealousy or rancor in telling you that many have copied what I have written. But they had the funds to publish it, and I have to worry about Yom Gezeilut Pesach. Simple as that. But if you take a look at the originals and when they were written, you see it. There's a very famous book now that was printed, Lilmodu Lelamed. I think I mentioned it to some of you. It's published by Tzirei Agudas Yisrael, Tzadikim, no two ways about it, and a very fine youth leader. It is a summary of every Sidra with added Divrei Torah on the bottom. Now, 35 years ago in England, in the England of Dr. Hertz, there was a gentleman by the name of, I believe, Lehman, L-E-H-M-A-N, a Rabbi Lehman. Huh?
Marcus?
No, not that Marcus Lehman. He was German. S. Lehman. He was a Rav, a Frum Rav in Britain, modern style, commanded a brilliant pen as far as stylistics in the English language, and he wrote for his congregation probably a two-page summary of every single Sedra, Sedra by Sedra, with a paragraph on the Haftarah and two or three Divrei Torah at the end. These two pages were put into a book and most likely were a companion volume to a Chumash for the uninitiated on Shabbos to be able to read either before Shabbos or during Kriyas HaTorah what it was all about. Others have done the same thing. I reprint occasionally from yet another one. This one is a colleague of mine, Norbert Weinberg, from New Bedford, Massachusetts. I think that's where he is, up in New England. An introduction to the survey. But be that as it may, this famous Lilmodu Lelamed, which is being gobbled up in every single Sfarim store in New York, people just die for, because after all, it's Frum and everything. When you look at it, Jack Kligman pointed this out to me. He was writing the Dvar Torah for one of his kids to deliver here. And he says, wait a minute. I have this Lilmodu Lelamed, and then I gave him this other book from Sabbath to Sabbath as a resource for him to use. He put down in front of me the Lilmodu Lelamed written right here in Borough Park, and he puts down Lehman's book of 35 years ago, copyrighted and legitimately published by Shapiro and Valentine, the most prestigious English publisher of Jewish stuff, second to Sansino. And I see word for word, it's the same thing. The only change, the only modification that was made is that the these and the thous are not there. I have Americanese instead of the Queen's English. And here this is done in the name of Torah and without acknowledging that the inspiration for it, the start, came 35 years ago from this book, which is no longer in print and will never again be printed. It won't be printed again. You know, so you're telling me Shlomo HaMelech, bring it back to your point that Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. It's not true. David HaMelech conceived of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and he was stopped. Shlomo HaMelech indeed built it, but you put it on the shoulders of David HaMelech. Were it not for David HaMelech, the Beis HaMikdash could have not been built. Were it not for the wars and the soldiers who fell in trying to clear the borders and push the borders back to the ultimate and ultimately conquer Yerushalayim militarily, Were it not for that militaristic campaign, there is no Beis HaMikdash. That's where the credit begins. Simple. But we can't do it that way. You know, I wish Rosen were here. Paul Rosen were here. So he would already tell me about that that Marconi didn't invent the telegraph, he discovered. And what's his name? Isn't it the same thing with the telephone guy? Alexander Graham Bell. Didn't someone else do something a couple of months before? Oh, the famous one. Rabbi Meir Shapiro, the Lublin Rav, is credited with starting this unbelievable educational curriculum called Daf Yomi. Now, Rabbi Meir Shapiro was one of the most charismatic Polish leaders pre-World War II. No two ways about it. He was the Rav and the Rosh Yeshiva of Lublin. He was not the first to start the Daf Yomi. About 10 or 12 years before, a second or third class personality, a Rav nonetheless, a big Talmud Chacham, but didn't have the charisma of Rav Meir Shapiro. He was the one who came up and conceived of the idea of a Daf Yomi, and he is never credited with it. Somewhere in my notes, someplace, I have it written, I have his name, and it was truly discovered that is the case. But ask anyone in the streets who started this concept of Daf Yomi, and it was Rav Meir Shapiro. No two ways about it. There isn't a human being, whether he learns on Torah tapes or on the telephone, there isn't a human being who will tell you differently. And if you will charge him with the responsibility of going finding the facts, he'll tell you you're crazy. It's just not true. And you know what my beef is, and my whole campaign is. Zionism was invented by Herzl. Zionism was invented by Rabbonim in the mid-1800s. All tzaddikim, all geonim. Every single one. Elama, it didn't take off. It was a firecracker that fizzed out. At the right time, and at the right place, this charismatic individual, notwithstanding the fact that he celebrated Christmas, on Christmas with a Christmas tree in his house, and his son was converted to Christianity, and his first lieutenant was married to a French Christian woman, somehow there was a convergence of circumstances and his charisma, and all of a sudden Herzl becomes the father of Zionism. 65 years before Herzl, Zionism was born in the Beis Medrash. And the world credits Herzl for it.
And 3 times a day when you say, like, and then we should tell it to
you. Now, you see, that is a romantic kind of a situation. It isn't a yozma politik. It isn't a mif'al. It isn't, we're not doing anything
about
it.
But that's not in the world. That's in the human character.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But when you go ahead and you write that we've got to create a national bank, and we've got to redeem the land by buying it, and we've got to create agricultural societies, and we've got to get a Moses Montefiore and a Rothschild to fund these things, which is precisely what was done by the Zionist movement in its very inception. There were so-called congresses of Rabbonim that were brought together. But if you don't know, I'll take you once to a congress of Rabbonim. Come sit at a meeting with me, an executive committee meeting. You'll never in your life see a bigger Purim spiel than that. There is never a time that you can stick to an agenda when Rabbonim are around, and there is never a time that you can talk without being interrupted. Yeah? It's a joke, and you get nothing done almost.
So why did they oppose Zionism around World War One?
Then on one leg. All right, my one leg is in the air. Then what you have to do is, on the nights that you have no studying for dental school this year, you will have to join me in an anticipated shiur to show you the sources as to why and how those sources, in many cases, don't apply to now. All right, but just to give you a little, on the tip of the tongue, let me just give you a simple example. Here I just painted a picture of you, for you. Herzl, late 1890s, he lived all of 44 years old. That was it. He functioned in the realm of Jewish activities only for a period of about, 5-6 years? Something like that. Surely not 10. Okay, under 10. Don't pin me exactly to it, but surely under 10. He was an assimilated Jew, no Jewish education whatsoever. Okay? as I said, celebrated Christmas. Furthermore, his son went ahead and converted. His first lieutenant was Max Nordau, Dr. Max Nordau, an assimilated Jew, married all of his life to a Christian woman. You wouldn't object to such a thing. You wouldn't go bananas when this guy comes and says, I have the answer to all of the Jewish problems. You have the answer. What kind of a role model are you for my kids?
But why don't you have the frum version of it?
The frum version couldn't get there. That's the whole point. The frum version couldn't get their act together. And when one Jew said, exactly like you, let's create a frum version, because the whole thing was born in our camp. 50 years before Herzl, we have writings. Rab Shmuel Malka, Rab Yehuda Alkelai. Just to name two of them. Rab Eliyahu Gutmacher.
Who were the people that went even before there was a movement?
Okay. Who were the only ones living in Eretz Yisrael to relive? The only frum people. Didn't exist. Reform, conservative, reconstructionists didn't exist. Only Chassidim or Misnagdim. Those are the only ones living there. That was the only claim to Yiddishkeit to a Jewish presence, a legal, possessive Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael, a frum community. Couldn't get our act together. We just couldn't do it. And the one man, Yitzhak Yaakov Reines, who founded what was then called Mizrahi, 1904, 1905. He was the Rav of Bialystok. Do you know what it means to be the Rav of Bialystok? That's sitting on top. The Rosh Yeshiva of Telz doesn't have as much prestige today as being the Rav of Bialystok 100 years ago. Simple as that. Take any yeshiva. There's no Rosh Yeshiva in the world who commanded such attention and such power because of his scholarship that is today as being a Rav in Bialystok 100 years ago. He was the Rav of Bialystok. He conceived of this mizug, of this synthesis that you take, and make a frum model, let's make it. They killed him. They killed him dead. He was destroyed as a human being in anything and everything that he did. So that's only what we call off a spitz level, that on the tip of a spoon. Now, the only thing that you have to do, after you ask me why, is challenge me to show you the sources. That I'm ready to do. But let's get back. On page 6, line 75. Mishenichnas av mimatim besimcha. Now, here is where we get into halacha, but I want you to understand the inner fabric of the halacha, to pierce into the infinite. Mishenichnas Av, the minute that the month of Av occurs, is Mematim Besimcha, you have to diminish joy. Omar Rav Yehuda Berei Rav Shmuel Bar Shelas Mishmei Derav. Rav Yehuda, the son of Rav Shmuel, quoted Rav, saying the following. Kishen Sheminichnas Av Mematim Besimcha. I want you to know that the same way that when Ov descends upon us, the 9 days, Mematim Besimcha, we have to diminish our joy, is Kach Mishenichnas Adar Malbim Besimcha. I want you to know that with equal weight and equal validity, the minute Adar comes, you have to increase your joy. Now, what do you see in a statement here? What does one have to do with the other? Up until now, this is already the whole page of Gemara and the page before. What are we talking about? We're talking about Shavuos and Thomas and Tisha B'Av. Okay? What's more, the quote from Rav is a legitimate quote. Mishenichnas of Mamat and Besimcha. But that's not Rav who said it. It's the Mishnah who said it. And you see that it's the Mishnah because it's quoted between two colons over there. Mishenichnas of Mamat and Besimcha B'chulu. That's the Mishnah. Comes Rav, who is an Amora, at the beginning of the period Amoraim, and repeats it. The only thing is, he puts in a little drei, he puts in a little curve, a zinger. The same way that the Mishnah means that when Ov comes, you decrease your simcha, so too, when Adar comes, you must increase your simcha. It doesn't look like the two ought to be put into one quote. If Mishenichnas Adar Malbin Besimcha, that Adar comes and you're joyous, stands as a separate quotation, that I can understand. But to take these two and to create the polar juxtaposition of these two is the question. And it is a question that bothered Amoraim. Therefore, on the next page, page 7, Omar Rav Popo. Rav Popo was the one to be able to give you an explanation of what Rav was saying by putting Adar and Ov together in one statement, Hilkach. It's that Rav wanted to teach you something very practical. Hilkach, therefore, Bar Yisrael, a Jew, the Islay Dina Bahadei Nachri, that has to go to war in the arena of court with a goy, Lishtamit Minei Be'ov. You've got to go ahead and try to avoid going to court in Ov, Dereya Mazlei, because somehow the stars have an evil, insidious effect on you.
Let's see.
We'll bring it down to Halach in a minute. V'limtzei nashe ba'adar, and rather, let him go ahead and exert himself, assert himself in Adar, why debori mazle? Because our proof is that from at least a national historic perspective, of Adar is a month when our luck runs the right way. Now what's going on here? Now here is, first of all, I don't know, well I certainly don't have the sources in front of me, but there is a famous statement that probably would take us 2 or 3 days to learn as to this concept of called mazal. In its pshat, in its literal dimension, the ancients believed that the movement and the position of the heavenly bodies affected what goes on in the life of the human being. Okay? That the stars and the heavens can affect us is not far-fetched to the 20th century scientific mind, because after all, we know now that the moon has a certain gravitational pull on Earth, and there is a relationship over there. The gravitational pull is too much, things would happen. If it's too little, disasters would occur. But in the minds of the ancients, they believed that based on the positions, and this is all of astrology, based on the positions of the heavenly bodies, certain things do occur. So there is a statement that says, Ein mazal Yisrael, it may affect the Scotchman, the Irishman, the Italians, the German, the French, and so on down the line. But it has no effect on Jews. That statement, I need 3 days with you to be able to learn at Tiferes Yisrael as to what is being said here. Now, even though the statement is of Ein mazal Yisrael, that we are not affected by this scheme, I tell you for sure, there have been little bits and pieces, little streams and laser lights into our minhagim that allow us to kind of play with the notion. One such thing is Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, don't go to court in the month of Av. You ask all of the month of Av, so we say, no, just really, I mean, la'alochi really means until after the 10th of Av. And if you have to beat an adversary in a legal arena, do it in the month of Adar. Why? Because Amazel happened to... I mean, we just happened to have been winners in that month. Now let me tell you what's going on. I want to give you an if. For instance. Help me in how a mind works. Your children decide to get married. And they decide to get married on a date that they have conceived in their minds. It makes sense to have their wedding on that date. The only thing is, once you look beyond the English date, the third Sunday in November, because that's just before Thanksgiving weekend, whatever it is, or the second Sunday in January, or the last Tuesday in December, whatever it is, you take a look at the luach, the calendar, and you see that that's the date that you have yahrzeit. You have yahrzeit for a parent. And that day of yahrzeit is when your children decided to be married. The halacha says, don't hold a wedding on that day. The Rea Mazle. Because that's a day of devastation in your life. Now that can mean several things. It could mean, how can you go ahead and have yahrzeit and dance at your child's wedding? But it could also mean something else. Can you imagine a couple of years down the pike, some tragedy occurs with your children? Either they are divorced or separated, or chas v'shalom, something with a child occurs. Do you know what your mind is going to say? Aha. Do you know why it's happening? Because they were married on a day when I had bad luck. Is it normal? The answer is yes. Is it rational and intelligent, Mike? By no standards is it rational and intelligent. Nonetheless, we do it today. Well, then you better speak very loud so that we can have it on record.
Is the entire concept that I've been fighting with you about this for a long time. You always look to the past. We have a tradition somewhere, and I don't know what it's in the moment, or whatever, that Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av.
Yeah.
That just like our Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av, our new Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi and our entire future might in some sense be born on Tisha B'Av. Let's look at that.
And we look at that also.
No, you forgot about that. You didn't say that. Maybe then, therefore, we should have our court cases in love, because we had bad luck in the past, but our new good luck is also going to start in love.
But if you look at the totality of experience in love, you must admit...
In the past.
Wait a minute.
No, that's not totality.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the past.
Correct. You must admit that you cannot divorce the totality of the past from this... incredible kind of feeling that every time Ov comes, sooner or later we're going to get clobbered. No, it's not every year, but it's...
Chareish Yemeinu Kekeda.
No?
Why not Chareish Yemeinu as... It will be Beis Mikdash
HaShlishi. It's not Chareish.
Yeah, renew your our day as you promised it will be. I mean, who wants to go back to... I mean, they were bad days. They turned bad. Look at the final result of the
Okay, then if the bad days in the past were in the month of Av, don't take a chance. Because maybe this month has a propensity, an inherent characteristic for us getting clobbered.
Maybe that's superstition.
Maybe that's psychological.
Maybe yes, maybe no. But can I ask you a question?
Sure.
All right? Listen to me carefully. A very simple thing. This happened to have been my life. You walk down the street. You leave for school and walk to school every single morning because school is on the other side of the street, 1.5 blocks down the road. Okay? Every morning that you come out at 8:05 in order to make the bell at 8:10, Jimmy Ryan is waiting for you, a couple of years older than you, and a couple of heads taller than you, and you know that every time you pass his house, he's going to clobber you. Something's going to happen. He'll spit at you, he'll throw something at you, he'll walk by you and kind of trip you, but in the tripping, he will kick you hard. You know? He'll say something. What do you start to feel after years of this experience?
You avoid Jimmy Ryan.
Yeah? And you'll feel something else. You'll walk by Jimmy Ryan's house 4 blocks to the west of you. And you'll be 30 years old and you'll cringe. Yeah? 30 years old and you'll cringe. And you don't come to understand why until you realize that the mind of a human being is such that when you get clobbered, in a way associated with a certain specific point in time or in space, that you have this irrational feeling that every single time it's going to happen.
See, well, I've heard astrologers talk like you're talking.
But it's not astrology.
No,
it's
but I've heard
mind.
Astrologers talk like you're talking.
Good.
Good things have happened during love that you're not telling us about.
Well, I'm
you
not
know,
telling
you. You only told us the five things. The Gemara only told about the five things.
Hold on, buddy. I'm only on page 7. I didn't get to page 10.
The Gemara didn't tell you that till.
That what?
I think. In fact, may be wrong, but that Hillel Wasserman and Jeffrey Fisher were both born, you know.
So? Good. No? And maybe countless Sadiqim were also born in Av.
And the Mashiach may be born.
And the Mashiach may be. I don't care.
And many other good things happen.
And probably many more good things happen in Av than bad things.
Right.
But every time you walk by Jimmy Ryan's house...
And World War II, and
yeah?
The Holocaust, which didn't happen in Av, let's remember it in Av. We moved it to Av.
I hear what you're saying.
To make it better.
I hear what you're saying.
It's
all right? And it may be totally, statistically, it may be all
it's
wrong.
It's psychologically good, but